Well, here we go again, sad to say. And there is so much irresponsibility across the board that you are seeing. Less than 24 hours after a mass shooting at a Christian school in Nashville, Tennessee. The details, what we know right now as of this morning, have not drastically changed at all since last night. You have three children who have died, all age 9. You have three staff members, including a custodian, a substitute teacher, and the school head, who also died in the school shooting yesterday in Nashville. And you have an individual who has been identified in the school shooting. We will not give this person's name, as I have often done in every school shooting or every mass shooting like this. I will not give the person's name, but we do know that the individual is a female who was transitioning to a man. Now, what you're hearing is people who want to make this all about whatever fits their political narrative. It's amazing. You've seen folks on the left, they revert right back to the gun control thing, by the way. That has been so, so predictable and so worn out time and time again. But now what they're also doing is they're saying Tennessee as a state passing laws like banning kids from going to drag shows or things around whether or not minors can be chemically castrated. They have blamed that in the last 20 hours or so. Now, on the right, you've seen less of this, but you've seen some pointing to the fact that, well, you know, how does the transgender identity of this person factor in? I don't know, because I don't know enough about this person yet. We do know that the individual had a manifesto. We do know that. We do know that when it comes to this issue in particular, mental health and mental well-being can oftentimes play a role in what we're dealing with what we're experiencing, with what we're seeing firsthand. That is absolutely true. Would I put this at the feet of an entire community? No, I would look at this individual and say, like anything else, an individual is responsible for their actions and does not represent a community at large. And that's true for any community. That's true for any group. I don't sit here and say that, you know, if somebody does something that represents that entire religious community, that entire race, whatever it might be, I don't do that. Nobody responsible should do that. So it's amazing how this thing has played out in terms of conveniently trying to fit people's political narratives less than 24 hours after this tragedy took place on Monday afternoon. But I keep coming back to the issue of mental health. You have somebody here who clearly was suffering. There was a manifesto, as it's been reported. John Drake, Metro Nashville PD chief, did confirm much of this yesterday in a press conference that took place. So let's hear from him confirming a lot of this news and what we know as of this point this morning.
She identifies transgender.
She does identify as transgender, yes.
Do you believe that how she identifies has any motive for targeting the school?
We can give you that at a later time. There is some theory to that. We're investigating all the leads, and once we know exactly, we'll let you know.
So was this a targeted attack?
It was.
Do you know about a history of mental illness, man or woman?
Don't know any history of mental illness at this time, but we are looking at that as the investigation is ongoing. And
there you go. That's John Drake, Metro Nashville PD chief, part of his press conference yesterday, as obviously he has been the point person for all of this. So we sit here and we look at the story and we say to ourselves, what is the common theme here? What is the common thread in all of these cases? What is it? What do you point to? Because you've heard everything from bans on gender ideology in Tennessee driving this to bans on drag performances. Heck, the Daily Wire, owned by Ben Shapiro, and who also, you know, Matt Walsh and Michael Knowles work for, who you hear on KCMO, they've been blamed for this. There were tweets from NBC reporters yesterday that have since been deleted saying, well, you know, the Daily Wire moved to Nashville and look what happens. Are you kidding me? These are people who are not journalists who, by the way, would lose their jobs, should lose their jobs, if there's any decency left in journalism. The thing they're not pointing to is a serious mental illness. That, by the way, a mental illness that oftentimes is championed by the media and the educational system. That's the biggest part of this conversation. And that is not just unique to someone being transgender. Now, in this case, that happens to be what we're dealing with, right? It does. And that's also why when we have these conversations, the mental health angle should absolutely be part of it. Whether it's on this or anything else in this realm, it should be part of it. It doesn't mean that it's guaranteed to be the case for everybody, but it absolutely has got to be part of the conversation. It's naive to not make it part of the conversation. This does not mean, by the way, that people with mental illnesses are all likely to go do what happened yesterday in Nashville. I know and related to, as I know every single one of you are in some way, people who have severe mental illness. It is something that is very close to me, as I know it is something that is very close to many of you as well. Having a mental illness does not mean that you're necessarily going to harm anybody. Oftentimes, those with mental illnesses are most likely to harm themselves, not others. But still, mental illness is the common theme here. And acting like it's not, pretending like it's not, and wanting to run with whatever political narrative is convenient for you and your side, air quotes, is completely disgraceful and is disgusting. And the amount of that you've seen over the last not even 24 hours, this happened at, what, about 10:15 yesterday morning? It is beyond disturbing. Beyond disturbing when you truly dig into it. I mean, heck, the White House press secretary, did you hear what she had to say yesterday?
How many more children have to be murdered before Republicans in Congress will step up and act to pass the assault weapons ban?
That is disgusting. That was before they even identified who the people were. The blood hadn't even dried. And the White House press secretary is up there doing that. Shameless, disgraceful, despicable. To be taking this and just pointing a finger at your political enemies. Beyond disturbing. Beyond disturbing. Obviously not nearly as disturbing as what happened, but when you talk about the fallout from it, boy, it is right up there. On top of that, there were multiple Kansas City area schools who received false reports of active shooters yesterday. We'll tell you what happened there as well on what was a obviously tragic day in Nashville, but there were also some false reports of active shooters in and around Kansas City. We'll tell you what that was all about. Excuse me. Coming up next, 6:13 on a Tuesday, Pete Mundo on KCMO. So yesterday, after what happened in Nashville, school shooting at a Christian school, three students, nine-year-olds, end up getting killed along with three staff members. An absolute tragedy down there in Nashville. The shooter has been identified. The shooter is a biological woman who was transitioning to be a man, identified as a man, and that obviously has become a part of the story as well. So you've got a lot of moving parts here. I'm sure there will be more press conferences this morning from law enforcement down in Nashville. We do have to tell you about the heroes down there as well, the names that we should remember. So we'll get to that and also tell you about what happened here. There were multiple false reports of active shooters in schools in the Kansas City region yesterday as well. Shane is in Adrian, kicking it off on KCMO. Shane, good morning.
Good morning, Pete. How are you?
All right. What's happening?
I just thought I'd call in, and I think you're spot on. I don't think either side should be politicizing this one way or the other. 'Cause it's a tragedy every time. That being said, I do find it very odd. I'm a gun owner, you know, and when you go fill out the NICSU form 4473, the ATF and the FBI had changed that form just a few years back. I believe it was actually under the Trump administration, when the Trump administration came out with the red flag laws, the whole take the guns first, worry about due process later. And you see that being carried over into this administration with the red flag laws and the concerns over mental health issues and all that. Statistically, the mental health and the suicide rate of the transgender community is pretty staggeringly high. And the thing that's odd about that is that NICSU 4473 form under the Trump administration, the ATF changed it to not just two genders, male or female. There's actually a third box for non-binary. Mm-hmm. I just find that really odd. You know, if we're going to attack, mass shootings, and we're going to say that it's falling under mental health issue category that we need to attack, which I agree, it does, but like, it can't just be a soft landing on what we're going to go after, in my opinion. There are certain people that should not be allowed to buy firearms. And if there was a manifesto that this person put out, I'd have another really hard time believing that someone around them did not see enough signs to call for a red flag.
Yeah, you bring up great points. Like, the data does show that overwhelmingly the majority of transgender individuals have considered suicide, and a large percentage have attempted it. So you're right. But like, this individual had zero criminal background and criminal history. So and as far as we know, as of last night, at least, this person did purchase at least two of the three guns that they had legally. So,
sure.
I don't know. I have not found an obvious or figured out, and there rarely is an obvious answer here, but I haven't found it on this specific issue, Shane.
Yeah, and I get that. I agree with that. My only concern about the whole deal with the NICSU 4473, your background check, is if they're filling that out and they're openly stating, you know, oh, I identify as non-binary, I don't fall under male or female category.
Yeah.
That's a
red flag in your eyes,
In my opinion, yeah, with the statistics that are out there, it's not that I don't like them. It's not that I like them. I'm neither for nor against. I live in my own little world. But on the other side of the coin, yeah, I think that's a red flag if the statistics prove that 40% of the time someone under that category, under the transgender or whatnot, you know, is contemplating or attempting suicide.
Yeah.
I think that's a giant red flag.
You know, that is...
They criminalize on the 4473 form. They actually state on there, are you addicted to drugs and all that? If you check yes on that box, you're not going to be able to buy a firearm. But then on top of that, they have a separate question that says, do you use or have a history of using marijuana?
Mm-hmm.
There's a separate question for that. Well, that's legal in how many states?
Yeah.
You know, and you can't buy a gun if you check yes on that box, but you can check yes that you're a non-binary and you can go buy a firearm. I just find that kind of really awkward.
Shane, very interesting points that you're making there. And I mean, I'm reading this from the National Institute of Health, this data I'm about to share. 82% of transgender individuals have considered killing themselves. 40% have attempted suicide. That is data from the National Institute of Health. So to Shane's point, if we have these red flag laws and somebody is outwardly putting that information on a piece of paper to try to purchase a gun, knowing the data that I just cited from the National Institute of Health, that's an interesting point that Shane is noting there. And that's not, you know, political either way. That's saying, if you know overwhelmingly that these people are either most likely wanting to harm themselves, as I noted, most people with mental health are more likely to just harm themselves. But either way, is this protecting them from themselves via these red flag laws? I mean, we have them, right? I know a lot of you disagree with red flag laws, but if we have them, should we put them to use in potential situations like this? Now, I don't know how this person in Nashville filled out those forms when they allegedly purchased these guns. I don't know. Maybe they didn't do that day. Maybe they didn't, you know, check that box that day. I don't know. But to Shane's point, if you're going to have these laws in place, these red flag laws in place, would that theoretically be a red flag knowing the numbers that I just cited from the National Institute of Health? It's a very, very, very compelling point that he just made there. Now, locally, there were multiple false reports of active shooters at schools in the Kansas City region yesterday.
I think we kind of had different topics as I read it. North Kansas City, I think they said there were people injured in a room. And Nod Noster was saying there was an active shooter or an armed individual.
Okay.
So all of the same nature, but I don't think they were identical in their complaints or their threats.
And then we had also Sedalia, Smith Cotton Junior High in Sedalia.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it looks like, John, here, there were other school districts across the state, Springfield, Branson,
wow,
St. Louis, per Fox 4, also received false shooting reports. And it looks like, according to a Kansas Highway Patrol spokesperson, that agency did not receive any reports on the other side of the state line in the KC Metro. So this was all the one in North Kansas City here, and I'm just reading this from Fox 4. A spokesperson mm-hmm. for the Clay County Sheriff's Office said the threat at North Kansas City came around 11:50 a.m. Someone called the North Kansas City Police Department's non-emergency line, falsely claiming multiple people had been shot. The mm-hmm. agencies are still investigating that claim, John.
Obviously, that would imply a shooter, but they were saying there were people shot in a room in the school.
Okay. Well, still, that's just, boy, mm-hmm. imagine, mm-hmm. That's just, and that was about 90 minutes after this Nashville thing broke yesterday.
There seems to be a timeline, at least on two of them. We had 11:50 and then Nob Noster at 11:54, but I'm mm-hmm. not sure the sequence of the others, but they may have kind of been around that same time.
Ish. All right. Well, just know that those obviously were all false reports, false flags, whatever you want to call them, and thankfully nothing did happen of that magnitude at any of these schools, and thank goodness for that. We're at 6:28 as we roll through a Tuesday morning on KCMO. We've got a lot of other things that we have to cover, we have to talk about, and we will be diving into here throughout the morning on 710 AM and 103.7 FM. I want to make sure that we mention the heroes in all this terrible shooting in Nashville yesterday. Michael Collazo, Nashville police officer Michael Collazo, and Officer Rex Engelbert shot and killed the school shooter yesterday. When officers arrived, investigators say the shooter was shooting at police cars through a window. Collazo and Engelbert ran toward the gunfire and killed the shooter. Compare that to some of the other school shootings that have taken place, right, in recent memory. And law enforcement, like down in Texas, Uvalde, are standing outside the door like a bunch of cowards. Compare that to these two officers, two young guys. They're up on my Twitter page right now, at Pete Mundo. You can see them there, what they look like. They're the heroes. They're the names that we should remember along with the victims. Michael Collazo and Rex Engelbert. They show up. The shooter is shooting at the police cars through the window, and these two guys ran towards the gunfire, killing the shooter, saving who knows how many lives. Steve's in North KC. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah. First of all, you talked about mental illness. You're making my point. The second thing is, when you guys take ads on the radio, you play them over and over again, hoping it will affect the person listening. And you guys run this shooting stuff on and on and on. And these depraved guys hear this stuff, and then they go out and copy it. So you newspapers, radios, you guys are responsible for this stuff quite a bit. Did you know that?
No, that is, Steve, that is completely unfair.
Everything I just said is true. Everything I said is true. Tell me what I said was not true.
Why is a newspaper or a radio station or a TV station responsible for the actions of somebody 1,000 miles away, Steve?
Because just like, well, they hear it all over the United States, just like you run those ads hoping somebody will affect you to go buy their product. You run the ads over and over and over again. I'm repeating it. A depraved people out there, these nuts, they hear it, and they go do the copy the same thing because they hear it over and over, and they
You know what we haven't done? We haven't, Steve, we have not mentioned the shooter's name. I don't do that. I don't do it. Been a rule for this show going on the start of year six. I won't do it this morning. So this person's getting zero notoriety from me. But it's our job to talk about the news, to cover the news, to discuss the news. Comparing that to an advertiser who's trying to get you to buy a product, that's not apples to apples, Steve. And that's the nicest way I can put it here on a Tuesday morning, John.
And we can't get by with saying, hey, nothing to see here.
Yeah. What are we going to do? Literally not talk about the news today?
No, yeah.
We're not going to talk about the news. We do what we can to not promote these people. Like I just said, what are the names I want to remember here? And you can see these guys up on my Twitter page right now, at Pete Mundo. I want to remember the names Michael Colazzo and Rex Engelbert. Those are the cops who saved countless lives yesterday morning. Those are the names I want to remember. Those are the names I'm going to repeat oftentimes on this show this morning. And hopefully those are names that we will all remember around this terrible tragedy down in Nashville. But, I can't sit here and not talk about the news, Steve, because, well, it could trigger somebody to do something. But that person, no matter what, they're not going to get notoriety here. And that's kind of all I can do on that front. That's it. So we'll talk about this plenty more throughout the morning on KCMO. We do have a lot of other things that we're going to be diving into here. On a lighter note, and I guess anything is lighter than what is unfortunately and sadly the lead story of the day around the country. Do you see this Chiefs superfan, this guy Chiefsaholic? Remember this guy? What was that? When did they play?
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
Former Navy SEAL Sean Ryan shares real stories from real people from all walks of life on The Sean Ryan Show. Comedian John Crist.
How long have you been in Nashville?
Let's see, 2018 is when I moved here. I lived in an apartment. I didn't know anything about it. I lived in L.A.
You were living in L.A.? How was that?
Yeah. Well, let's see. Good for my career. Sent me to rehab, though. So that's pretty much the sum of it.
The Sean Ryan Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Houston. When would that have been there, Mark?
That was in mid-October, I believe.
Mid-October, I think it was, right? Was it October? Jeez, it was that long ago? December. Early December, Mark. You got your days off a little bit. Sorry about that. I shouldn't have put you on the spot there. So, Chiefsaholic, he is facing more legal trouble. This is the guy who was arrested down in Bixby, Oklahoma, outside of Tulsa, for an alleged bank robbery. So, here's what happened. His real name is Xavier Babadar. He is accused of removing his ankle monitor and skipping a court hearing yesterday morning, according to the Tulsa County District Attorney's Office. A spokesperson for the office said it charged Babadar with removing an electronic monitoring device, in addition to his original charges for robbery with a dangerous weapon and assault while masked or disguised. Babadar was to be arraigned on charges stemming from the bank robbery in December during the hearing. There is now a warrant issued for Babadar's arrest. If found, he will be arrested and held on a $1 million bond. So this guy was out, obviously, on bail. He had an ankle monitor on. He took it off, and he did not show up to court yesterday. By the way, I don't know about you, but I am not at all surprised that this happened. Like, are you guys, this guy is going for full-blown legend status.
He wants Robin Hood, Bonnie and Clyde.
Exactly. That's who he wants to be. Billy the Kid, like, that's who he thinks he is to some degree. He's got this sick, twisted, perverted view of who he is and how important he is. He's trying to sell his story, by the way, right? Right, Mark? He's trying to do that.
That's exactly right. He won't take interviews unless he's getting paid.
Yes. He thinks that he is much more interesting and valuable to the media than he is. He will not do interviews because who did he rejected somebody for an interview, some major publication.
I think it was New York Times, right?
I think you're right. And he's like, I will not tell my story unless I get money for it. Now, what I hope he does is I hope that from prison one day he self-publishes a book and nobody buys it, because then he'll realize that his story is not all that compelling. But this guy has a sick and twisted view of how important he actually is. So what he's doing is he's now skipped his court date yesterday. He ripped off his ankle monitor. Like, where do you think he is? There's no Chiefs game to go to, by the way.
Tijuana.
Right? Tijuana. There's no OTAs yet. That doesn't start till next month. Where does a guy like this go? I have no idea. But the fact that law enforcement down in Tulsa allowed this guy to have his bail get lowered so he can meet the bail and then proceed to take off his ankle monitor when he's due in court, I'm sitting here and I'm like, I know it's hindsight 2020 kind of a thing, but also I'm also wanting to rip my hair out and say, I told you this was possible. Nothing about this is surprising that this guy would take his ankle monitor off and not show up to court yesterday.
If he's still missing in the next, like, 3 weeks, we're only a month till the draft. We got to be on lookout.
He could show up, I suppose. Imagine that. Guy shows up at the NFL draft in his dopey wolf costume.
Bolo for a wolf head.
Yeah, you know,
oversized wolf head.
He tries to announce the Chiefs' first pick. Yeah. He just rushes the stage.
Oh, gosh, what an absolute lunatic. Can we get some, like, good news involving Chiefs fans, by the way? Can we hear about all the charitable?
This is going to be the one that's making the rounds, isn't it?
Can we find some charitable Chiefs fans who are, like, donating to great causes and highlight them instead of talking about degenerates who are trying to allegedly rob banks outside of Tulsa and then not showing up for their court dates? Is that too much to ask? These guys make us all look bad, by the way.
This guy was a good guy for a little bit, though. He's donating to things, and people thought he was, and
true,
he was totally something else.
True. He did think he was Robin Hood there. You're right about that. He was giving to charities, Mahomes' charity. Everyone thought he was just a swell guy, Chiefsaholic. Well, now he's on the run, didn't show up to court yesterday, and I hope this thing ends quickly. I hope he is found quickly. But a guy like this, like, I'm not even convinced he's in the country right now. Would you think he's in the country today? Like, do you think that Xavier Babadar, by the way, the oddest name for a criminal I could possibly think of. The fact that that's his real name is just so crazy to me. But do you think that that guy's in America right now, John?
I think it sort of reminds me of Fletch and Chevy Chase using Bar.
Yeah.
I think in the movie. And Fletch, that's what cracks me up.
Oh.
No, I'm sure he's on the back trails to Tijuana or somewhere.
Something tells me he's just not in the lower 48 right now.
Mm-hmm.
He used to do these petty crimes with his mom and brother, so some people are speculating he's with his mom and brother somewhere right now. I know he tried to get to Arizona with his mom and brother, even being held. They said that they were going to try to get him there, and he wasn't able to go, obviously, but...
Well, you know what? If his mom and his brother are with him, then they're accessories to this, and they should be put in prison as well. Good riddance. 5767710. The text line is 816-576-7710. In a state to our west, they have made huge strides when it comes to kids and teens and their social media access. I would love to see this come to Kansas and Missouri. I'll tell you what that is coming up next. I mean, how much more data do we need to say, you know, whether it's Utah doing this absolutely outstanding bill or Kansas and Missouri copying this outstanding bill, this should be something in a time of political divisiveness that we come together and say, you know what, this is in the best interest of our kids. It is good to be here, 7:06 on a Tuesday morning on KCMO. Obviously monitoring what is happening down in Nashville, the terribly tragic school shooting yesterday that left 3 kids dead, 3 adults in the school as well, and then, of course, the school shooter. So we're monitoring that. We'll have plenty more on that throughout the morning, throughout the hour here on KCMO. But before the top of the hour, I just mentioned that Utah, their governor signed this bill into law. It prohibits kids under the age of 18 from using social media between the hours of 10:30 p.m. and 6:30 a.m. And on top of that, you need parental consent to access social media apps if you are under the age of 18. Now, this is something that's changing quickly. Republicans and Democrats are quickly changing their tune when it comes to big tech. And thank goodness it's taken them long enough. But when you have study after study after study showing that when it comes to young people especially, social media use is causing a major uptick in depression. There was a recent study out of the UK that shows a direct correlation between how much social media young people use every day and every week and how depressed they are. So I'll just give you one example here. And by the way, it impacts young girls far more than it does young boys. That's just that every study will show you as well that the mental health of young girls has fallen off a cliff. And a large part of that is being driven by social media. So here's an example. For those that use, for young girls, this was a recent study out of the UK. For young girls who end up spending more than 5 hours a day on social media, the rate of depression is nearly 40%. Now, if they only use 2 hours of social media per day, the depression levels for girls is under 20%. So it doubles. Basically, as they double their social media use every day, their depression levels go up. So I'm sitting here and you know, I'm a parent of two young kids. So my girls are 4 and 2, and I, you know, who the heck knows what the social media world's going to look like by the time they're 10, 12, 14, 16. All I know is we've spent the last 10 years, and I feel terrible for kids and a lot of parents who didn't really understand what they were giving their children over the last 10 years. The data wasn't really there. They gave these kids these phones because, well, you need your phone, right? You need a phone. And now we're seeing the data start to roll in, and it is horrible, horrible for the mental health of these kids. And it especially is impacting young girls. So meantime, boys, just to give you some comparison here, boys versus girls, here's how much worse it is for girls versus boys. I just told you this recent UK study shows that young girls who use at least 5 hours of social media per day have a depression rate of nearly 40%. For boys who use social media 5 hours per day, that number is about 15. So it's about 2.5 times higher for girls when it comes to social media use. Now, why is that? You know, because guys are dopes. Let's be honest, that's why. Because, you know, even as young guys, you scroll through social media. I imagine, you know, social media wasn't around when I was a teen. But you scroll through social media, and then you kind of move on with your day, and then you go and you bust your buddy's chops, and then you're playing, you know, baseball, basketball, whatever. It just doesn't, the emotional side of it that females, that young girls deal with, is just not the same as obviously what young boys deal with. So that's just my non-scientific answer as to why girls get impacted so much more than boys. But then tie it back to what Utah is doing. Utah is saying, first off, if you're a minor, you won't be able to get on your social media account between 10:30 p.m. and 6:30 a.m. I like that. And then also, you've got to have parental consent to even have these apps on your phone. Now, there's always going to be bad parents. We understand that. A lot of parents are just going to give them the phones and give them the apps and say, have fun, stop bothering me, and that's wrong. We cannot do everything to protect young people from bad parenting. There's only so much that any government, any state, any municipality can do. But if we can take these steps in the right direction, it will be a win-win. Because, by the way, let's say that there are bad parents who are like, you know what, I don't care if my kid's on the phone at 10:30, 11:30, 2 a.m. I don't care. He's always going to have his phone. She's always going to have her phone. Well, guess what? If you put a law like this into place, let's say in Kansas and Missouri, instead of just in a place like Utah, that has impacts on entire communities. If kids can't see their phones, if kids can't be on TikTok, on Instagram till all hours of the night, the pressure is less on the entire community. I would love to see both of our state legislatures copy this out of Utah. And don't tell me, oh, this is big government telling you what to do. Stop with that. Stop. This is about protecting children. If you're going to use the big government line, then I expect if you're a Republican especially and you're going to use a big government line, we can't do this, that's big government getting involved, then I expect you to introduce a bill that allows kids to start smoking and drinking at some point this session. I'm all about, you know, libertarianism when it's appropriate, when it actually makes sense. But we know that children's brains are not fully developed, cannot handle these social media apps that are wildly addictive, that are meant to be addictive, by the way. I mean, let's be honest. I'll admit it. I hope you would admit it as well. Sometimes you get on these phones, you get scrolling, and you're like, where did the last 10 minutes go? What did I do the last 10 minutes? That happens to us as adults with fully developed brains. What do you think it's doing to kids? So I'm going to put this Utah story, what they're doing in Utah, on my Twitter and Facebook pages. And that way you can share it. You can reach out to your local state rep. You can reach out to your local state senator. I'm not expecting anything to get done in the next month if I'm being totally straight with you here. But at least lay the foundation for something like this coming to our states. And it doesn't need to be wildly partisan. It should not be wildly partisan. To be, how much more data do you need to realize that this is not something that is beneficial towards children? And give parents a tool to help them throughout this process. That's what this is really about. Giving parents the tools. That, by the way, is backed up with data. It's not just some politician's opinion. This is backed up with data. If we know that increased social media use is leading to increases in depression for young people, why would we not do this? Now, maybe big tech has its tentacles and has its lobbyists in Topeka and Jeff City that will prevent this from getting done. That I can't speak to, but it doesn't mean it's not the right thing to do. 5767710. Our text line is 816-576-7710. As we'll hear from you on this, bottom of the hour, Dave Traubert, Kansas Policy Institute, will be joining us on KCMO Talk Radio. He's got a follow-up on these Johnson County valuations on the Kansas side of the state line. Y'all got your property valuations in the last few weeks. The deadline to try to appeal those is tomorrow. So Dave's got some very important information on that he'll share with you, all coming up on KCMO Talk Radio. Well, I get it. Some of you maybe on the text line aren't fans of this proposal, what's happening in Utah, that I would love to see happen in Kansas and Missouri. And the governor signed this bill that prohibits kids under 18 from using social media between the hours of 10:30 p.m. and 6:30 a.m. And it is requiring age verification for anyone who wants to use social media in the state. And on top of that, if you're under the age of 18, you have to get parental consent. This is a no-brainer. Now, on the text line, I've got some dissenters here, which is fine. That's what makes the world go round. Pete, parents need to be better parents. The state should not have to step in and help with their kids. I have two daughters. They both have social media. They both did not have issues, and I checked their phone on a regular basis. Well, that is great. That is a good job by you. Now, is the fact that they didn't have any issues directly tied to your parenting? Is it nature? Is it nurture? Usually it's a little bit of both. But does that mean that it's not good legislation? That's like saying, you know what, let's just drop the drinking age because, well, you know, I mean, what's the big deal? Just be a good parent, all right? Let's just say when it comes to tobacco, we're not going to have an age for that either. Just be a good parent. Make sure your kid's not smoking. Make sure your kid's not drinking. We have now over 10 years of data to suggest that social media in particular is addictive and harmful to young people. So what's the point in keeping the laws the way they are and letting it be a free-for-all for young people? What's the benefit of that? Steve's in Kansas City. He's on KCMO. What's up, Steve? Good morning.
Hey, our 12-year-old wanted a phone, so my wife did some research. There's a place, I don't know if I should use the company name, but basically they take us a regular smartphone, they wipe all the software off of it, install their own software. Only certain apps are allowed, and we have to approve them. And every contact phone number has to be approved by us as well. So if some random number tries to text or call him, it goes straight to us, and then we get to figure out who it is and approve it. And my wife actually does a pretty regular review of the text that he sends and so forth and so on. So there's resources out there that you can help.
So what, I mean, I have no qualms with you sharing that company, or what is it? What is the brand?
It's called Pinwheel. My wife did all the research on it, so I just know the name.
So it's Pin. Okay, so Pinwheel. So he has a physical iPhone or whatever. He's got a smartphone, right? And then Pinwheel is the company that basically wipes it and operates it.
That's correct. They put their own. I get some sort of proprietary software on it, which allows complete control over apps. He can't download apps on his own. If he tries to send a text or call another number, it doesn't go through, and he has to come to us and let us know who it is, and we can put it on the approved list.
Okay. And you feel like that's been working pretty well? How long have you been doing that?
Since Christmas. It was his Christmas present.
Okay. So you're about 3 months in, and no regrets? It's going well?
No regrets on our part. We can now tell him that he's got a phone, and when he complains about it, we're like, yeah, you know, you're 12. You're not paying the bill.
Now, what do you do at night with that phone?
Oh, the phone gets plugged in a common area, and he gets put in his bedroom.
And he better not come out, right?
We would definitely notice, yes, sir.
Okay. All right, Steve, that's good information. Pinwheel.
Thanks,
okay.
Pete.
Good deal. Thank you, man. All right. Mark, you got one of those for the – you got your daughter, who's what, 10?
Yeah.
You got her a smartphone for Christmas.
Yep.
Any regrets 3 months in?
No. I was going to mention Apple has similar it's not Pinwheel, but it has similar features to it where we can control when the phone is off, when it's on. We can control – yeah, she cannot get any text or anything from a number that's not approved by us. So
does it go directly to you if it's an unapproved number?
No, it doesn't go through to her phone. So she has to say, hey, I'm getting a text message from my friend. This is my friend's number. And then we verify it, essentially.
Hmm. Now, can she tell you, because, you know, kids are slippery. Mm-hmm. Can she say, this is my new friend at school, Jill? And it's really some, you know, schmuck boy named Bob who's, you know, I don't know, trying to flirt.
That could happen, but we're monitoring it closely, so that wouldn't happen.
Okay. Can you get into her text messages at any time you want?
Yeah, we would have to take her phone, but we can take her phone from her, so yeah.
But you can't do it from your phone. You'd have to physically take her phone.
Yeah.
Okay. Has she tried to pull any quick ones on you?
Not yet.
I'm
waiting for it.
You know it's coming, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right, so no regrets thus far, though.
Yeah, now, I'll keep you posted if she tries to pull a quick one on us.
It's coming, Mark. It's coming.
I know.
So even though you've got a 10-year-old a phone for Christmas, Mark, do you have any qualms with this legislation? Would you be accepting of this? Even though I know you're a good parent, you don't let your kid have the phone at night, would you be open to this kind of legislation?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Okay.
I like it.
I like it, too. I very much like it. Also on the text line, okay, yeah, Pete, let the government step in for irresponsible parenting. Great idea. That thought process is so a generation ago.
It's a little naive. My mother did a great job, but that didn't save me from being stupid. The moral fiber sets in general, but it's still not going to save you.
It's not. We all right. do dumb things. That's what we...
Just to see if you can, even.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Half the time is to see if you can do it, right? So if you're sitting here and you're looking at this story and you're saying, well, you know, just be a better parent. Just be a better parent. Then why do we have any laws when it comes to kids? Why are even kids defined as minors, right? Just, you know, there's no such thing as a minor. There's no such thing as a child. We're all just persons and beings. Why even bother? And if the overwhelming data when it ties social media to mental health is not enough to get you to say, hey, our state lawmakers should be doing something about this like they're doing in Utah, I'm not going to see that one eye to eye with you here. I'm just not. Coming up, if you are a Johnson County, Kansas resident, you have 24 hours left to appeal your property assessments. And there's something slippery that the county has done with these assessments. We'll tell you about it next. Got a big win. Big, big win yesterday. Against the man. I beat the man. I needed some help to do it. But got it done. So remember I told you a couple weeks ago about city of Kansas City, Missouri, where we lived 5 years ago now. sent us a bill for over $1,000 between what we owed them, what they claimed we owed them, along with interest and fees for not paying the earnings tax on Kate's job that she was still doing back in 2018, John.
Remember? I recall said assessment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I got a big win yesterday. Now, they claimed that we owed them hundreds of dollars in earnings taxes that we didn't pay from a job that she did when we lived there in 2018 before we had the girls and whatnot. And that we also owed them hundreds of other dollars in fees and interest and everything else. And they sent this thing in the mail to us multiple times. They sent us one copy in January, another one in February. So thank goodness, been working with this accountant. And I said to him, I said, what is this? This is bogus. I said, what's going on here? And he went back and I showed him on the W-2 from that year, we paid an earnings tax on the monies that she made. And it was a fair earnings tax. It was 1%. We paid the 1% to the city of Kansas City that year for what she made. So I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. And he's like, oh boy, we see this all the time. City of Kansas City, they just throw stuff against the wall and see what sticks. They just say, and by the way, they're going back 5 years hoping that you get something in the bill from them, something in the mail from them that's a bill. You get scared. You're like, I don't want to pay any more interest. I better pay this off. And you blindly send them a check and hope that they'll go away. And they're just guessing. They're literally throwing stuff at the wall from 5 years ago, John. You sound like you're not surprised by this story.
City Hall doesn't know what's going on. Gee, huh? News.
You met Lala Kent on Vanderpump Rules. Now Lala and her friends share everything on Give Them Lala.
I'm expecting my second child. Which is very, very amazing.
Congratulations.
To say. Feels
We're
that
all
way.
With child.
You can say she's pregnant, she's knocked up, anything except with child.
Oh, I love with child. I'm going to be saying it all the time. Yep. Excuse
yes,
me.
Yes, yes.
6 feet, I'm with child.
Watch what Lala is talking about on YouTube or search for Give Them Lala wherever you listen.
So anyway, we put together a letter and we show them proof that we paid them an earnings tax of 1% in 2018. We had it all shown there. We proved it. And we had the dates of when, you know, we were living in Kansas City, working in Kansas City, what we paid Kansas City, Missouri. So they send the revenue department with Kansas City, Missouri, sends back an email to us yesterday saying that they have reversed the assessment according to the documents that we provided. However, we have to complete some RDPOA file to provide a case satisfaction letter. And then they write, thank you for your cooperation. Have an excellent day. We couldn't screw you. Have an excellent day, they tell us. So I'm talking to the accountant yesterday, and I said, just, you know, shoot me straight on this. I said, what kind of BS is this? Are they just, you know, whipping stuff out and hoping that they can find a couple of suckers to send them some extra money every year? And he's like, well, I don't know if I could actually say that, but if you're asking me in kind of a man-to-man capacity, off the record, yeah, that's basically what's going on. And I'm like, gosh, you know, I mean, I love the city. I like a lot of people that work in and around the city. But this is why I would not go back to being a taxpayer in the city right now. And this is case in point. And he says this stuff happens all the time with them. They just kind of throw stuff against the wall and let, you know, see what sticks, John.
Yeah, I mean, that's how you lose trust in people. You're going, come on, you have to fight stuff like this. Going, look.
Yes.
Oh, well, we'll reverse that.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Reverse something you never should have done
exactly.
To begin with.
Exactly. Touche.
That you didn't even have data to back up. I had a W-2 that showed you what we paid you in earnings taxes that year. And thank goodness I still had it on file, by the way.
Right.
You know, I keep that stuff for a few years, and now I'm going to keep it for, you know, a few more years just in case.
Absolutely.
It's unbelievable.
They owe you money.
Now we're talking. By the way, that's a good point there, Mark. I should bill them for what it's going to cost me to have the accountant go through the process of, you know, not having to pay them for something I never owed them to begin with.
Yeah, you get a processing fee to fill out their form and send it back, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe I should have Quint Lucas directly hand me a check in the mail during one of his Thursday morning segments. You think I could get that done?
Better hurry up and cash it.
And the pain and anxiety and everything else that goes along with it.
Oh, trust me. I agree. You know, there is pain and anxiety that goes along with that. And I'm looking up and opening my mail after a long day at the office, and I got a bill from Kansas City, Missouri for over $1,000. Yeah, there's some pain and anxiety that goes with that. I should bill them for that as well. A little PTSD from the city of Kansas City, Missouri.
This is kind of a big picture thing, you know, when you think about the things that, gee, that's new, but did we need it? And how come this is still broken in this town, et cetera? It's like just part and parcel for the deal.
And by the way,
I was still laughing the first week when you came on and people were calling, you'll see, Pete.
Yeah.
Going here back. We are going on year six.
Yeah. Oh, I saw, right? I saw it. I saw and I conquered. But I certainly did see it firsthand, to your point.
You had to put in more work than they did to refute it, right?
A lot of you on the text line, by the way, are saying that similar things have happened to you, and you've dealt with this as well. Yeah, Pete, nothing like having to prove you're innocent. Whatever happened to innocent until they prove you're guilty? No, they just guess who's guilty and hope that you're a sucker and that they never actually have to prove your guilt. And then when you prove you're innocent, they're like, don't worry about that. My bad.
Oh, yeah. I see here. Wrong Pete Mundo.
Yep. Yeah, there were a lot of us who, you know, have wives by the same name.
Peter A? Yeah. Oh, no, this is for Peter T.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I'm glad I can laugh about it now, and I'm doing a little bit of a victory lap here, and I'm, shall we say, dancing on the grave of the KCMO Revenue Department for trying to screw me over and being able to get back at them. But man, oh man, I'll tell you, the horror stories I heard from my accountant, by the way, he said that not only is this something that happens as well, but you also will have situations where people will wind up opening up, let's say, a business, and they got to start paying payroll taxes. And even if, you know, they're with Jackson County, but they might live in Kansas City, he said the whole thing turns out to be one big mess. And they start signing you up for things and shaking you down for things you didn't even realize you were paying for. So there's my little PSA on a Tuesday morning on KCMO Talk Radio. We've got Steve Miller Band tickets giveaway at 8:45. Tirade Tuesday is coming up at 8:30. Do not miss that. I got some new reporting, nothing earth-shattering necessarily, but a headline story at the Kansas City Star as of this morning is about the Royals in downtown baseball. Of course, opening day is 2 days away, coming up on Thursday. We'll be out there at the K for the show Thursday morning, and we are scheduled to have owner John Sherman on at 9:30 on Thursday morning. J.J. Piccolo, the GM, is going to be here as well at about 9:15. So 9 o'clock hour is going to be humming on Thursday morning as we'll be out at the K getting set for opening day. And for us, you know, yes, we'll talk baseball, of course, but it's much more about what is happening when it comes to this news side of things, downtown stadium, what they're thinking about. So here's the story from the Kansas City Star. Headline is, Royals decision nears. Could these two sites be in play for downtown stadium? It says here, city and county officials continue to portray the East Village as the team's highly preferred option in private conversations with the Star. And it doesn't require an elaborative investigation to secure the clues. The developer there began demolishing buildings in January, intensifying speculation that East Village will ultimately be selected from the group of 14 sites the team said it originally considered. A Jackson County official who asked not to be identified told the Kansas City Star, quote, we believe that the East Village is where they are focused on and have been focused on. That being said, we have no agreement on that site. Okay, so that's not shocking. That's not really necessarily news. The East Village is the front runner. I would call it the front runner today. We talked a lot the last couple of weeks about North Kansas City possibly being a spot, and there are reasons to me that that makes sense. Why does that make sense? At least as an idea, it makes sense for both sides. It makes sense for the Royals to look to Clay County and say, you know what, if Jackson's got to worry about the Chiefs, which we know that these two things really have to be done together. You can't give the Royals whatever they want without knowing what the Chiefs are going to want as well, right? Because that's how the Chiefs end up saying, fine, we're going to Kansas. You have to know what both teams want before you make a smart decision on what's in the best interest of the Jackson County taxpayer and what you can actually afford based on what the asks are of each team. That's number one. Number two, the other reason this might make some sense for the Royals, and we talked about this the other day, the crazy wokeness and the progressive nature of Jackson County and KC Mo proper may be ultimately something where the Royals say, screw this. Like, we don't want to deal with this. We'll go to North Kansas City. We'll deal with Clay County, all these crazy groups like KC Tenants. I mean, yes, they can still protest all they want, but Clay County and North Kansas City, far less likely to give them the time of day, which is what happens when they walk in the front doors of City Hall in Kansas City, Missouri. I mean, KC Tenant shows up, they roll out the red carpet for these people. I mean, there are just a bunch of head cases. Hey, we demand more money. No, you're going to get paid a fair rate for the job that gets done to build the stadium. These groups that will, you know, go on places like KCUR and other places in town and will go to City Hall and, you know, cry about, I don't know, making more money or being able to afford housing in the ballpark village that the Royals want to build downtown. Like, what does that have to do with anything? You get hired to do a job based on what the market determines that job is worth. It's not about whether or not you should be able to celebrate or buy a beer at the ballpark on your spare time. It's not about whether or not you should be able to live in the ballpark village that's going to have rentals. Who cares? You know, for people who are building Patrick Mahomes' mansion here in town, should they have the right to, you know, rent a room out in the Mahomes house because they built it?
They can use the pool. Right?
They get, you know, half a dozen jumps off the Mahomes diving board every month, right? They get to do one cannonball, one backflip.
Oh, they get a Saturday every month from noon to three.
Exactly. What a ridiculous statement to make, but that's what these people are saying around town. We must be able to, you know, enjoy the entertainment district that we build. Like, I don't know. Not really. That's not how life works. So the Royals may put up with that garbage to get their East Village downtown stadium, I suppose. But they may also say, hey, you know, Clay County, North Kansas City, they're not going to put up with these lunatics, with these, you know, commie lunatics. They're not going to do it. They're going to move on. So that could be appealing from the standpoint of Clay County. And for Clay County, you know, fastest growing part, obviously, of Kansas City, Missouri proper is the Northland. It is booming up there in Clay. Clay may say, hey, you know what? Yes, we're going to have to kick in or create an extra sales tax potentially out of it. Who knows how much it's going to be, but here's why this is good for us. And then Clay Countyans can decide what they want to do. But either way, I think that that location is somewhat appealing for the reasons I just mentioned. But according to this Kansas City Star piece, the East Village is still the top spot. Now, I don't deny that. But the East Village, there are problems there as well. First off, what are you going to do about the fact that a lot of the homeless shelters are right down the street from the East Village location? Like, how is that going to work? And there are great people involved with those organizations. I'm not taking anything away from them. But does that make a lot of sense? From the Royals' perspective, where you're trying to potentially get in 30,000 people a night, do you want to be right there in that location in terms of what's around it? Does that make the most amount of sense? You're not in walking distance to Power and Light, by the way. I mean, you are if you're willing to walk 15 minutes, but you're not walking distance to Power and Light. And that's where a third location comes up in this Kansas City Star piece. And it's a location the Kansas City Star knows all too well.
Uh-oh.
Yes.
Got their big glass house there?
Yes.
Yeah, the printing factory there?
Yes. The old printing pavilion, 1601 McGee Street. That is the third option that gets talked about here in this Kansas City Star piece. Now, I don't know if the Kansas City Star has like a deal with the family to, you know, push their old building since they screwed over the Privatera family who owns that location. They're not getting any rent off it right now. So they're like, all right, we'll throw you a bone. We'll write about your location here in the paper on Tuesday. I'm not insinuating that or suggesting that, but I do find it interesting that the Star spends a lot of this piece writing about their old building as a possible location.
I might distinguish here. Are we talking about their original building, the old brick building?
No.
I think many people in town would not want to see that raised for a ballpark.
We're talking about the
printing plant, right? Yes. There along I-70.
Yep, right off 70. Right, yep.
Gotcha.
That's the one we're talking about here.
Yeah, the old building's far enough away, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So this one is right there, obviously. You can walk to Power and Light fairly easily if the Royals want to latch onto the entertainment district there. But they may not want to, by the way, because they want to build their own. I just mm-hmm. don't know if there's demand for a Power and Light and a ballpark village in this town. I don't know if that demand exists. I know the Royals want to think it exists at least 81 nights a year, but I'm not convinced it necessarily does. So if you could cut your costs down, here's the thing. The Royals say this is a $2 billion project, and let me just throw out a wild idea here. What if, maybe this is what if Wednesday, write this down, John. What if the Royals only have to spend $1.5 billion instead of two? They can shrink the size of the entertainment district, take less money from the taxpayers, put more of their own money into building the actual stadium itself, and then latch on the more of what's going on down in that area, Power and Light, Lowe's Hotel, everything else. There's an idea. Now, here's why the Royals may say that they don't want to do that. Because they have this grand vision of the ballpark village funding the baseball operations. They know the only way they can really compete with, and they're never going to compete in terms of payroll with the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Mets and whatever and the Dodgers, but the best way for them to try to compete in a sport that does not have a salary cap is to do what? Try to find revenues wherever they can and then invest it into the team. Maybe they'll do that, but still you have to have customers to make that happen. And I'm not convinced the customer base is going to be there like they think it is.
I'm with you, sir. I had that thought. 81 dates a year, what, April through September, maybe 1st of October. Going to have something else down there to be a draw sports betting. So I wonder, you know, if that might affect anything.
Well, that's a very good point as well. Yeah.
You've got to have something to do. 365 minus 81 leaves you a few dates.
Yeah, there's a couple of dates left over there.
Going to have another reason to want to go to the ballpark. They're not going to have winter softball.
No.
Or anything like that.
No.
So, not like you're going to have a concert in September.
No. Nope.
I mean,
certainly not in December or January, because they're not putting a roof on it.
Why would I want to go down to the ballpark?
Yeah.
Well, maybe if I could bet on the hoops.
Yeah.
Something. I'd go down.
It could be a hangout spot outside of Power and Light, outside of T-Mobile, so maybe people spread out a little bit more during, say, the Big 12 tournament. There's an idea, and you could bet on games if Missouri ever gets stacked together.
That doesn't pass in Missouri.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing. Missouri's got to get its act together.
The Olathe Royals.
The Olathe Royals coming in hot.
We got the Great Mall
great
spot. Mall.
There you go. Everything to like. Great Mall ballpark.
You guys are thinking about that mall spot still. What's in it for you? What's in it for you, Mark? I know you got an angle here.
I'll get season tickets, and I'll walk across the bridge to it.
Okay, that's what you're going to do. All right. Well, we'll find out more. I've got John Sherman coming on this show, the owner of the Royals. I'm going to be out at the K on Thursday morning, 9:30. Don't miss that conversation here on KCMO Talk Radio. 5767710. Pick one of those three: East Village, North KC, or the old glass star building. If you had your druthers on those three, if you had your choice on those three spots for the Kansas City Royals and their future: East Village, old star building, North KC. What are you picking? 816-576-7710. Pete Mundo on a Tuesday here on KCMO. It is good to be here on a Tuesday morning on KCMO Talk Radio. Did you know that today is apparently National Weed Appreciation Day? Yep. Looking at that right now, courtesy of our friends on KCTV5. It is National Weed Appreciation. What happened to 420? Isn't 420 the weed day? Isn't that weed day, 420, Thursday, April 20th this year? 420 is the big celebration.
Planning a big concert.
Okay.
Yeah, Wiz Khalifa.
So why do we need a National Weed Appreciation Day on top of that? Why is March 28th Weed Appreciation
Day? Every day, man. For some folks.
I suppose, which is fine. If that's your thing, as long as it's legal wherever you're at, I mean, but like, what is that? Are we going to have a, when is?
This is like Christmas and Valentine's Day. People like to debate, why is today? Why not the rest? Right?
Well, that's true.
Mm-hmm. But you're right. I mean, there's already a whole urban tale and a whole legend around 420 coming up.
When is Coors Light Day? That's what I want to know. And my four-year-old wants to know when Chicken Nugget Day is.
Coors Light Day is a Big 12 tournament, right?
Oh, yeah. Or every day, if you ask me. But either way, to your point. All right, so it's National Wheat Appreciation Day. I learned something I didn't know at 9:22. March 28th, I'll make a note for next year. Tim is in the Northland. Tim, we're talking about the Royals, three locations the Star writes about this morning, East Village, North KC, and the old printing pavilion downtown, the Star's old printing pavilion. What's your pick there, my man?
Well, I actually used to work at the Star way back in the day for a little bit, a couple of years. And if you want a downtown stadium, I guess that would probably be the best location. But, you know, they've already got the power and lights. So if you want to build something, you don't want to build around the East Village. That's just a poor area. The Northland is the most prosperous probably right now. There's so much going up here, even farther north. But the North Kansas City is still kind of central to the city, and you could still get a look towards downtown and maybe still catch some buildings in the view from home plate, looking out over the center field, bleachers, however you set it up. Mm-hmm. But there's room to grow down there. Even in North Kansas City, they put up a number of apartments and lofts recently, remodeled stuff. It is actually growing, surprisingly, in the city of North Kansas City population-wise. Mm-hmm. But you have a lot of people in the Northland that you just don't think about. And Clay County and Platte County are the second and fourth richest counties in Missouri, not Jackson.
Mm-hmm. Excellent points there, Tim. Excellent points all around there by you. And you're right in terms of the Royals saying, okay, is there really demand in the downtown loop for an East Village ballpark village, which would be, you know, rental units, office space, restaurants? While it's not right next to Power and Light, it's close enough where I don't know if the demand is going to be there for both of those places. And let's not forget, Power and Light is still being subsidized by the city. It cannot operate on its own two legs. It does not operate by itself. The city is still giving monies to subsidize the Power and Light District. Yes, it looks great during Chiefs playoff games. It looks great for the Big 12 tournament. But there's a lot of nothing, and I didn't live far from there. There's a lot of nothing that goes on, you know, 300 days a year, give or take, down there. So you've already got a destination that is not standing by itself. And now the Royals want to build something possibly 15 minutes away as you walk, but really a 2-minute car ride away. That's more or less the same thing. Whereas Tim notes, if you go to North Kansas City, it is booming up there. They just put up, I was driving up there a couple of weeks ago, met somebody for lunch in North Kansas City, and then checked out this, you know, ballpark site, this proposed ballpark site, which is the old bowling alley there in North Kansas City. And there's a lot of stuff going up around there. And you will get people coming from the north, traveling down south, who have money to spend, who are looking for something to do. That does make sense. And I heard people, and I've heard this as well, people bringing up the idea of, well, what does it do to, you know, the Johnson County person that wants to go to a game? It's another 5 minutes, maybe. I don't think that's a big deal at all.
It's just
John.
All what-if-ism.
Yes.
Right?
Well, that's true.
We don't have the Kings because people just don't want to drive down to Kemper Arena / Hy-Vee Arena now. No.
Yeah.
No. You'll go to support a winner. We go to support a winner. And this notion people driving from the north, Kansas City sports are well-supported by Wichita, so people coming up
true.
From the south. So,
yeah, that's a good point.
You know.
Absolutely. So I don't think that's a really big problem at all. Oh, it's another 5-minute drive. I'm not going. No, if you're going to go to a game, you're going to go to a game. That's it. That's the extent of it. We all understand that, right? Now, one thing that should be noted here, because there's this grand idea of having the downtown skyline as a backdrop to center field. That is almost impossible in Kansas City based on these three locations. Because baseball stadiums from home plate to the pitcher's mound face northeast. That's how, as I understand it, basically every baseball stadium faces northeast because of how the sun sets and where you want the sun to be at certain points of the day. And that's where the phrase southpaw came from. A lefty is a southpaw because they're facing south when they're on the mound. None of those three options allow you the ability, if they're facing northeast, the old Star Printing Pavilion, the East Village, and North KC, none of them allow for the city skyline to be a backdrop beyond center field if the stadium faces northeast. The best bet might be the Printing Pavilion, because then at least there's kind of some of downtown.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.
North of 70 there in the backdrop, but none of them are great. You'd have to go to like the West Bottoms or something to really have the skyline be behind center field. So I don't know how important it is to the Royals, but just kind of a note here as well that I wanted to bring up for the people that care about that stuff.
We're going to trade in a scoreboard for the world's biggest green screen out there, right?
That's exactly right.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.